Do you know your child's true sporting potential or how your child can make a top career in sports? Welcome to the Smart Sports Parenting Podcast, where we share powerful secrets for your child to get to the next level in sports and achieve monumental results that go beyond your wildest goals. So get ready to turbocharge your child's sporting journey with your host, Satyajit Sadanandan, who's the world's only sports talent engineer with over 20 years of sporting experience. And now your host, here he is, Satya.
Hi there. Most parents would like to send their child to the big famous academies of this world, like Barcelona or Manchester United. But are these the right options for every player? Of course not. In the same way that every player is different, every academy is also different and won't work for every single player. In this episode, I'm chatting with Pontus Moldberg, an accomplished analyst and scout from Sweden, to find out how should you figure out the most suitable academy for your child. With his encyclopedic knowledge on football and an incredible passion for the game, Pontus has tracked the progress of many successful footballers over the years. He is a man of multiple talents and wide experiences in the game, and is a go-to guy for insights on players and clubs that one can't typically get. For example, the sort of details on Zlatan Ibrahimovic that he reveals in this episode, how his relatively unconventional career choices at a young age sharpened him and made him the legend he is today. Deep analysis that is beyond what one can find on Google or even in Zlatan's famous biography. Pontus also shares in this chat other interesting insights based on his personal experiences and observations from football. Insights that will help sports parents and young players to make smart choices and get ahead. Enjoy. So first of all, welcome Pontus. Welcome to this podcast.
Thank you very much, sir.
Why don't we start with you giving a bit of a background to the listeners about your journey in football in particular and also in youth football?
Sure. I basically studied a sport management program, and while I was a student, I was doing scouting and individual training on the side for Bromma Pojkarna, which is the club from the west suburbs of Stockholm in Sweden. And it's the club that has produced the highest number of, in terms of quantity of professional footballers in the last 20 years. At the time when I started, they were a former club to Manchester United. And the youth director and sport director, Tommy Söderström, was the Scandinavian local scout for Manchester United at the time. They offered me to be a scout and also an individual trainer of their elite academy teams.
That's a very interesting point you mentioned about Bromma Pojkarna, which I'm sure a lot of parents listening to this podcast are not really familiar, especially those not from Sweden, which is that it's not really a big, a top professional club. And even though it is not, its academy is probably one of the best academies in Scandinavia, and it's especially in Sweden.
Yeah.
And this is something which most parents don't think about. Most parents who come to me are like, can my son go to Manchester United or can my daughter go to some other academy which is very popular or very famous club, right? Is there any merit to the fact that if your child goes to the top club academy, that's the route to take, or is there some other route to take? What's your thought on that?
There's basically two things you look for on in a youth player. One is like ability, current ability, and one is potential. And then you basically have to multiply those two factors to get like a final potential ability, because your current ability multiplied by your potential is basically where you can be in the future. So if you have very high potential but not high current ability, then you're basically ruled out to go to any of the top academies. If you have very high ability but maybe not that much potential, then you should basically go to where you get the most and best training environment. So then I would say that like going to a top academy is a good thing, although it will also be very risky, since they will always be recruiting like 2, 3, 4 players each year of that academy, and they will also be bringing up players from under, so they will be always looking to cut players. and you also have to like factor in what happens in the latter years in those academies. If it's like Manchester United, there's like one or two players that actually get regular playing time from like the last three or four generations of youth players at Manchester United. The only one I can think of currently is Scott McTominay, and then you have Jesse Lingard, but then you have to turn back the clock 6-7 years to get to Jesse Lingard actually being a youth academy player. You have Rashford, of course, as well. But so this is something you have to measure up. How hard will it be to break into the first team? And like for every McTominay and Rashford, there's like 10 or 12 other players that were like cherry picked at their certain age to come to Manchester United and still haven't made a grid. That being said, like Manchester United still produce a lot of players that like will feature in like other clubs and will choose a different path. But generally speaking, I would say it's better to choose a path where you know that like there's a lot of players graduating into the first team. And the positive thing about Brahma Poikana is that it has a very good educational standard. Even if you have high potential and high ability, you can start playing for a second team or like even a recreational team, like a grassroots team in their youth setup, which isn't professional, and then advance as a certain age at your career. Let's say you're born late, like in November or December, and you're 7 or 8 years old, so you're not going to probably, you're going to struggle to get, maybe just because of your ability, even though you have huge potential, to get into the elite team of the five-a-side academy. But then when that academy maybe goes to 9-a-side at the age of 10 or 11, then you might have a chance. And Brahma Poikana have like a model of play, a position-based model of play, that is quite good. So like you get a good education even if you're in like the second academy team or in the recreational teams. The negative thing with Brahma Poikana though is that it's a lot of players and that it doesn't create natural scarcity. The management has to force the scarcity at some point, because the way youth players really graduate is from like what I would call a baptism of fire model. Because if you ask a coach if a player is ready, and the coach is looking to get competitive results in whatever team he will be, he will always choose the lesser risk option. So he will never risk playing the high potential but like low or unknown ability player, because it's not in his interest. Because he's got a lot of expectations of actually getting a result in whatever age group and whatever age he's in. So he will always risk not playing that player. So you have to like kind of force on the scarcity. That's why, like, for me, the optimal club is to find these small footballing towns with like a long football legacy and with like high statistics of overperforming, where there's a significant amount of professional players compared to the overall per capita of the whole town or region itself. And if you are in such an environment, there will also be a natural scarcity, because there's just not enough people in every age group. So it will create competition, and it's like the perfect blend, especially for the players who have a high potential but a low ability. They can still get the best education and the best competition at every level, because every time you go down a notch in a big city, you're always going to go down a notch in quality of your teammates. And this is, I think, a big thing which a lot of parents and a lot of people don't understand, that football is a team sport. So it's not like tennis in the sense that like if you have a good coach, you become a good player. Like a lot of tennis players in the famous Floridian Academy, I forgot the name.
The Boletari Academy.
Yeah, Boletari, yeah, he had a philosophy of like even with the Williams sisters, they didn't play competitive almost up until a senior year. And you can do that in tennis, but football is a team game. So a lot is about playing with good teammates, because if your teammates aren't good and you stand out, you're still not going to understand how to play to your strength, and you're not going to improve on your weaknesses, because you're not going to have teammates or opponents who will expose them.
what would you say is the right team? Generally, the myth is, as long as a team is winning, your child should be on that team. But hearing you right now, that's not necessarily the truth, is it?
No. I wouldn't say your child should be winning. The team has to be good. And like your child, if he's the best player ability-wise, then you have a problem in the team, because you like then the potential gets kind of sidestepped, because the player can just play to his current ability and still dominate. So,
and there's a point of saturation which will get in, because the player is not being challenged so much.
Exactly. We're playing against a team and winning 9-0 is never good, neither for the winning team or the losing team, because you need an aspect of competitiveness in the games. Youth football is more about individual player development than about actually winning and getting the results. Because at the end of the day, it's not about winning youth tournament A or youth tournament B. It's about being able to produce a player that can either be part of that club's professional first team, or that you can somehow sell on and move on in the football ecosystem to another professional club. So it should be about producing the most professional graduates. This was like a big challenge in Bromma Pojkarna. So what they would do is like they would promote the best players, especially the players who maybe were high in ability, to play with older players in order for them to all the time be challenged. And especially on the preseason, they would play against older teams.
The important thing probably there is that you get yourself challenged, but don't play at a level which is much beyond you. So there's that fine balance which needs to be brought about, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
What about street football? How important is that?
I think street football is very important, and it's a shame because there's less and less of that in Sweden as well. And I think it's important to keep it competitive, and you get to play on quite small pitches with quite a few participants, so you get a lot of ball contact in a competitive environment, which I think is the key to developing a lot of your attacking skills. And in terms of scouting, like when we scout for potential, at a very young age, you only almost look for physical traits, and then you start looking for technical traits. So these are all the abilities that you would critically develop in street football. What you wouldn't develop that much is maybe, you know, positioning, or like, you know, tactical discipline, or even like teamwork effort. But like that's all able to come later, at a later stage in the player's development cycle.
There's another myth which I commonly encounter. Is it important for their child to be spotted at a very young age? I remember a story you told me about Zlatan when he was 17, and he was clearly the biggest talent that Swedish football had ever seen, even at that point. And yet there were people criticizing him, his game, and saying probably that he might not make it at the highest level. Your thoughts on these late developers, so-called late developers? Zlatan probably is not a late developer in that context, but we have a lot of them, right?
Yeah. And Zlatan, I wouldn't say he's a late developer, but he's not an early developer either. He's not a guy who, like, he was in the Malmö Academy, but he basically went there from already having debuted in, like, what would be, like, you know, the fifth or sixth Swedish amateur senior tier. Mm. So Zlatan went from playing for these local, quite unorganized youth teams, and then, like, because of scarcity, he got moved up. So he started playing for the juniors at, like, 14, 15. Not being a big talent, he had like disciplinary issues at the time also, and other areas socially. So that he got picked for like the regional national tryouts, but he didn't like advance from the regional national tryouts. But that's more because he didn't really fit the general mold, and he wasn't at the ability of the other players. He's also born quite late, I think it's October or November. In that sense, he would have been like later on physically than like his like 14 and 15 year old parallels at that time. But he was still such a big talent that like Malmö at like the point when he was 17 still got him to play like in his in their junior team. And then I think a lot what aided Zlatan's development was his two club choices after Malmö. He had offers from Arsenal. Wenger even like offered him the shirt with his number 9 shirt of Arsenal, which he still keeps to this day just to mock them. And he chose Ajax. And I think Ajax was a big step for him. Also in Ajax, he was competing with other players of similar ability, but maybe not similar potential, like Mido from Egypt, which was like Egypt's biggest talent ever at that point, I think. And he outclassed them in the end. And after 2-3 years in Ajax, he moved on to Juventus, which was another great choice. And he could have ended up in Roma. There was like the old Milan forward and Roma and Milan coach Nils Lidholm, which was a scout for Roma at the time, which was pushing very hard for Zlatan to join Roma. But he chose Juventus. And I think that did a lot for Zlatan, because in Ajax he learned a lot about like technical intelligence and technique. And in Juventus he got his mentality to another level in terms of training. Like Juventus still saw him at like 23 as an unfinished product basically, and forced him to train finishing like for many hours, many times a week. And he improved tremendously. I mean, he didn't become the same like spectacular player as before, but he became a better player and a more disciplined player. Like in Zlatan's early age, you always felt a tingle because you never knew what would could happen. He could score from anywhere. Whilst like Zlatan later on became like a more disciplined and good goal scorer. But I think that's a lot to do with the path he chose, and that he selected clubs that were good environments for him to thrive in, and that also molded him.
Yes. And it's related to what you said earlier as well. Don't go with the big names just for the sake of those big names, and choose the clubs which are probably the right environment for you. Although Ajax and Juventus are world-class teams themselves, but then in context of his choices, they were probably not the number one choice for other players in that situation maybe. That probably made the difference. And how is youth football in general changing in terms of players coming out? Do you see a changing trend in what it was earlier and what it is now?
I would say the biggest change is on the mental side now. Mm. First of all, in many developing countries, you have so many options. You have, of course, esports, which is growing very fast. You have different choices.
Yeah.
Before, it was much more about like the parents being able to drive the player in a certain path or in a certain career. Now the player needs that inner drive, because if he doesn't have it, he will just get sidetracked. Also in Bromma Pojkarna, we have this generation of two players, both born 94, Simon Tibling, who plays for Brøndby in Denmark now, and Ludvig Augustinsson, who's a left-back starter for the Swedish national team and plays for Werder Bremen in Germany. They're both very disciplined players. None have ever touched alcohol. They like are basically almost nerds in terms of like getting physical recovery products, tweaking their diets, and like getting better. So they're taking this new generation to a next level. They not just have the inner drive, but they're making really the most of their bodies. And they're also able to be very self-critical in their career choices and so on. Simon Tibling went to Groningen in Holland, theoretically a more competitive league than Denmark, and he was a starter there. He had some injuries and then lost his starting place. And instead of like trying to fight on in a similar league, or he chose to take a step back, went back to a top team in Denmark instead of focusing on going maybe to Greece or like to Turkey to stay in that same pay situation, while Ludvig Augustinsson, the Swedish left back, has done similar smart choices. He played in Brommapojkarna until they got relegated from the top flight. He then went to IFK Gothenburg, which at the time was top four club in the Swedish top flight. He could have gone abroad, but he chose to take a slower step and establish himself at that level. He then stayed there for 2 years, went to FC Copenhagen, and then stayed in FC Copenhagen for 2-3 years, had offers to go to England and stuff, but chose Werder Bremen, which is lower mid-table team in Germany, because he thought he would have the best career possibilities there. So maybe not so high risk, because high risk can also give high reward, but in his term, very calculated risk. And he's always become like a starter, an integral part of the team, because he basically scouts the team as much as the team scouts him.
That's a key point there, for the player and the parent to be also thinking about making these critical choices and doing
taking
this self-awareness.
Taking ownership of the situation.
Yeah. And it's a two-way process, which most people tend to forget also. Do you have any final words for the parents? Some words of advice or the players?
Do your research. If your player is gifted analytically and intellectually, like the two guys I mentioned, Ludvig and Simon, then also let them indulge in everything from, like, you know, protein and amino acid absorption to like recovery and injury recovery and so on, because there's a lot to learn, and like you should have that inner drive to take control of your own situation
and look at things beyond just the ground, what you're doing in the ground, also these things outside it, right?
Yes,
like
yes.
You mentioned. Thank you so much, Pontus. It's been a pleasure, and it would be very useful for the parents, I'm sure. Thank you so much for your time.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Sports Parenting Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss anything. And do take a moment to write a review for this podcast on iTunes or Google or wherever else you listen to it.